Oh, it's so delightful because my talk fits slides in beautifully next to Shakyapada's lovely talk. So thank you. I could have got up and kissed her a couple of times for saying just the right thing. Okay. So this is the lion's roar of Sangharakshita. This is the lion's roar of Sangharakshita. And it's based on a talk he gave in 1971 called Evolution or Extinction, a Buddhist View of World Problems. So I was ordained nearly 15 years ago in India. And after that, this is not advised. You're meant to keep your life quite calm and take in being in the order fully and things like that. But mine didn't work out like that. The 3 years after I was ordained was a time of turmoil for me in a really kind of positive way. I left my partner of 25 years. I left my family home. I left my job. I left the area that I lived in. I lived in two different communities. So I was sort of semi-vagrant. And then when I went and moved to Sheffield, I discovered I'd left my history behind as well. Because apart from Shanti City knowing me a wee bit, I didn't know anybody in Sheffield. So I just constantly walked away from stuff. It was one of the most productive times of my life. It really made a huge difference to me. And during this time, I read this talk. I read this lecture, Evolution or Extinction. And I'd never heard anyone talk about it. It wasn't in the Mitra study. I hadn't heard it alluded to in any of Bhante's talks. So I went to see him, and I said to him, I've just read this talk of yours, and I wonder what you have to say about it now, because it was written in 71, so nearly 50 years ago. And he said, I don't remember it. So I said to him, it started off with you telling a really long story about what it's like to give a talk in India. And I went through the beginnings of it. Anyway, yes, I remember the one now. I know it very well. It comes to mind clearly. So we had a bit of a talk about it. And then I said, I want to know, one, have you changed your mind about any of this? Secondly, is there anything you would like to add? And do you still stand by it? And he went, yeah, no, I haven't changed my mind. Still stand by it. And I said, I don't know. I haven't come across it much in the movement, I haven't come across it at all in the movement. What do you think if I start making it more public? And he said, I give you my blessing. So this is done with the blessing of Urgyen Sangharakshita, which is good, isn't it? So the Sangharakshita's lion's roar is about the roar of engagement in the world that we live in. As I say, it was given nearly 50 years ago and is still totally pertinent. Very briefly in the talk, Bhante talks about the problems that the world faces: economic, political, commercial, social, racial, and now I would like to add ecological, population pressures, mass movements of people, and culminating in climate change and extinction of species. This world is in deep trouble. This world is in deep trouble. In the talk, Sangharakshita speaks about promoting change. He talks about the spiritual development and the spiritual community as essential foundations for change. He says that we can have strong reactions to the cruelties and injustices of the world, but when this initial reaction has exhausted itself, we can feel drained and powerless. The problems of the world seem too big for us to do anything about, so we try and forget them, we close down, and our lives can become small and limited. Bhante says, we are sorry that others suffer, but at least we can enjoy our own lives. And he doesn't stop there and says very clearly, however, My view is that such an attitude of withdrawal from public concerns into purely personal ones is one that is not worthy of a human being. It represents an abdication of responsibility. It's quite strong, isn't it? Bhante goes on to talk about four things we can do as spiritual practitioners, and I'll come back to this later. So Bhante says, my view is that such an attitude of withdrawal from public concerns into purely personal ones is one that is not worthy of a human being. It represents an abdication of responsibility. We find it very hard to respond to the state of the world, to the cries of the world. And there's loads of reasons why this is. Okay, and I'm just going to run through them very quickly. I could talk quite a lot about most of these, but I won't, all right? It's just a list. Okay. We can refuse to accept the evidence, okay? This really isn't happening. So climate change denial in the face of overwhelming evidence. Refusal to accept implications. So remaining unclear. So I've had a conversation with somebody recently who said a climate change was not man-made. I don't care who made it. It exists and we can see it all around us in the world. The conversation went like this. I don't think that it's man-made, it's part of a natural cycle. And I said, it doesn't really matter to me how we got into this state. We've got to do something about it. We're the only animals on this planet I know that are self-aware, and I'm not going to rely on frogs to do anything about it. We can go into displacement activity. We can recycle as much as we like all the time, beautifully, and it's not going to make a difference to some of the bigger problems. We can go into apathy. There's a very strong evidence of something called the bystander effect, where if a lot of people are around you and somebody falls over in the street, everybody thinks someone else is going to pick them up, that it doesn't have to be you. So someone else will sort it out. Someone else knows much more than I do, and they'll get it sorted out, thank you. We can become alienated. We can not have a heart response, not able to take it thing. We can accommodate things intellectually or just say it doesn't matter. We become alienated from nature. We have no sense of a future. We can become resignated, become cynical. And then we can just get angry. We can go into scapegoating and blame. It's all somebody's fault. It's got nothing to do with us. It can become authoritarianism, opportunism and conflict. All this gets in the way of communication, stops us from hearing what's happening or being heard when we want to say something. We can go into depression. Now, I want to make a distinction here between reactive and clinical depression. So if you get upset with what you see happening in the world, you are not ill. You are a human being with a heart. And to be distressed is a normal response. But when we have no connection with our responses, we push away the pain, our joy goes with it. We close down the spectrum of our emotions and we get cut off from ourselves. Or we can retreat into a private sphere, a kind of bunker mentality, where we feel helpless and disempowered. I'm just interested in my family. I just love my dogs. It's my football team that matters. None of these things are terrible. It's just using them as an emphasis for our lives. And there are a selection of responses turning away from the problems of the world, which can be uniquely Buddhist. Okay, so we can confuse or mistake being calm for sensitivity to reality. So just focusing on calm in meditation, when really being responsive to the world, we may not be that calm, but we are sensitive to what is real and what is happening around us. We can retreat into private spirituality. Our practice is seen as having nothing to do with the world as it is now. The Buddha had nothing to say about the problems we face in the world now. It's not actually true, but we can just say, oh, this is my practice and I'm going to get on with it. So we can see meditation and ethics as a personal attainment rather than a tool. Okay? We can mistake kindness to ourselves as a way of not looking. Okay? It's kind to myself not to get upset about this, not to read these things in the paper, not to take things in. What we really need is we need to be more grounded and stronger in our practice and more compassionate and empathic. And we can have engagement with our self-change, just being out there and doing everything without even thinking about what it is we're feeding into and how we're behaving. And it's really difficult to see results when you engage in big problems, in big situations. We come from a very goal-oriented culture. We want things to happen quickly. We're completely unused to thinking in long term. American Indians, when they talk about now, they talk about 7 generations in the past and 7 generations in the future, because that's how big now is. All right, it contains the actions of the past and what we feed into the future. And we just get diverted, you know. Holidays are nice, aren't they? Your mobile phone's fun. We just get diverted. And the future is inherently uncomfortable. The future is where we die. So it's sometimes really difficult to look at that. So I'm just going to quote Shelley. When was he writing? 200 years ago? Something like that. Can somebody correct me if I'm wrong? No? About right? So Shelley says, "The great secret of morals is love, or a going out of your own nature, an identification of ourselves with the beautiful, which exists in thought, action or person, not our own. To be greatly good, you must imagine intensively and comprehensively. You must put yourself in the place of another and of many others. The pains and the pleasures of a species must become your own." So I'm going back to Bhante now. What does he say we can do as Buddhists? Sangharakshita tells us that the first thing we must do is self-develop. We can raise our awareness of ourselves and others through meditation, which helps us see more clearly how we can live more ethically in the world. We can become strong enough to look suffering in the face and not turn away, strong enough to see what has to be done and follow it through. Change only happens when we look difficulty in the face, when we turn towards whatever is the problem, he says. Self-development always comes first. However active you might be in all sorts of external areas, political, social, educational, or whatever, if you are not making an effort to develop yourself, you are not going to be able to make any truly positive contribution to anything or anyone. Another lion's roar, I think. Mm. Secondly, Sangharakshita talks about joining creating a spiritual community. We promote change with others because we come together, we are stronger than we are on our own. We do not have to do this on our own. One of the most important aspects of the spiritual community for me is we are in an ideal position to critique the society we live in. An ideal position to challenge cultural assumptions and habitual ways of living. The spiritual community values kindness, doing no harm, and being easy to support. Bhante says, "The fact that we have the financial resources to help ourselves to what we fancy does not justify our consuming the wealth of the world without consideration for the claims of others, both in the present and in the future, to those same resources." If we as a Sangha practice Buddhism wholeheartedly, we challenge the assumptions and paradigms of society. It's nothing less than that. Then he starts to talk about other ways to influence the future of the world. He suggests we withdraw support from all anti-spiritual forces. This is about having as little as possible to do with groups, people and organisations that promote greed, hatred and delusion. Quite a long time ago in my life, I was chair of my local branch of the Labour Party, and I was in a meeting which was mandating people to go to Labour Party conference. And there was quite a lot of debate in the room as to who our representatives were going to, how they were going to vote. These are very intricate kind of debates you can get into. And it just, the whole thing just dissolved into old disputes, people's old arguments with each other, kind of family feuds. I mean, I just watched the whole debate dissolve into kind of tribalism, basically. And I left that room and I quit the Labour Party. And I would like to think that I would actually be able to go back into that sort of situation and stand my ground. But I knew that I couldn't at the time, that I needed to kind of withdraw and become a different sort of person to be able to actually put up with that nonsense and be able to say something about it, you know. So you have to be very careful. You have to choose what you can take on and make sure you have the resources for it. I mean, I have a joke with people when they say, oh, well, you'll have to catch up with me on Facebook or you'll find this information on Facebook. I don't have anything to do with Facebook. I have never, ever had anything to do with Facebook. And I say to them, I refuse to feed the demon of capitalist surveillance. And they go, oh. And it's true. You know, that's how I feel about it. But on the other hand, it is a bit of a challenge. Okay. Fourthly, Sangharakshita says that we need to exert an influence for good in any group we unavoidably belong to. So that might be, something to do with organising in your school, for your children. It could be anything. We all belong to groups which we unavoidably can't get around. And Bhante says, it is always possible to act in accordance with one's ideals. There is no need to surrender your individuality and encourage people to think for themselves and develop their own minds. When I worked for social services for many years, and on a couple of occasions, my manager asked me to do things that I thought were unethical. And she'd got good practical reasons why she asked me to do those things. And although she could understand my viewpoint that they were unethical and I was deeply unhappy about being asked to do them, she still wanted me to do them. So at one stage, I had this little trick, and it was called, if you want me to do that, you will have to request that in writing. Mm-hmm. And, it's going to have to be as a written request, and I'd like it in my hand. And it really made her think about what she asked me to do, because she never did that. And I didn't have to do what she wanted me to do. Because in that request, it was just saying, think this through carefully, please. And I want proof that you're asking me to do this. And it worked. It was good. I mean, she was a good woman. It's just that she got herself into stuck in a bit of a difficulty, and she was trying to get out, and I could understand that. But on the other hand, I wasn't going to do anything which would upset me, you know. I would also like to add to this, so this is number 5, but this is coming from me, okay. I would also like to add that we can join with other communities to promote spiritual values and take your values and principles with you into that world. Do not leave them at home. Remember that you have something very valuable to offer the world. Earlier on this year, I was walking down the road and I was approached by a neighbour of mine, and she was somebody who some years ago we'd been doing some kind of pop-up outreach groups from the Sheffield Buddhist Centre, and she'd attended one of the groups that I'd been to, and she said to me, I want you to come round and have a cup of tea with me because I've got something to ask you. So I went round and had a cup of tea. And she said, I've been getting involved with Extinction Rebellion and I would like you to consider coming to help because you have something to offer them that I am aware of that they really need. I'm involved with people who are having panic attacks because they're so frightened about the reality of the situation. I was talking to a young man who was getting up in the morning and the climate crisis was the first thing he thought about and it was the last thing he thought about at night. And he's not paying proper attention to his small children because he's too wrapped up in what's going on. And I think you might be able to help out with things like this. And so you won't find me on the streets with Extinction Rebellion. I've got too many weird things wrong with me to be safe in difficult... I can't keep myself safe in difficult circumstances. But I am going to offer them what I... I've done a taster session, went down well. I'm going to offer them with another Buddhist, what I call resilience training. And actually, you'd be able to spot it. So it's Pratita Samuppada, Ethics, Mindfulness and Metta, and it's encouraging empowerment, enjoyment of life, and care about yourself and others. And it's really important that people are able to do that. There's no quick fix here. We're in this for the long haul. Earlier on this year, I was on a retreat with Parami, and she reminded the team of the Bodhisattva vow, because I think, you know, there's a bit of me which thinks that habit is so strong that if we get reborn here on this planet. Mm. You know, it's unlikely we're going anywhere else. And we will have to face the future too, because we'll be here. So we may be doing this for lifetimes, and it's really important that we understand the best way, the clearest way, the kindest way of helping in these circumstances. Yeah, and we were at I did a meditation at Climate Change Action yesterday lunchtime. Shantacity was there too, and it was a bit bizarre. It was dreadfully noisy, but we were a fourth sight. You really were full sight. And the people stopped, and there were about 25 of us, something like that, motley crew of different kinds of Buddhists. And we had our photographs taken a lot. We made an impact by sitting there and meditating. It was interesting. So the lion's roar of Sangharakshita is that he tells us that the first thing we must do is to self-develop. Next, he talks about joining or creating a spiritual community, to withdraw support from all anti-spiritual forces and exert a force and influence for good in any group we unavoidably belong to. And I would also say, join with other communities to promote your spiritual values. Sangharakshita concludes this talk by saying, it doesn't matter how humble a level we are operating at or how undramatic our work may be. If enough earthworms burrow away under the foundations of even the most substantial building, the soil begins to loosen, it starts to crumble away, the foundations subside, and the whole building is liable to crack and collapse. Likewise, however powerful the existing order may seem, it is not invulnerable to the undermining influence of enough individuals working, whether directly or indirectly, in cooperation. So I'd like to conclude that to train in the Dharma is to become a new kind of person. It's a radical training, and we have this to offer the world. It's radical to know who you are and what you believe in. It's radical to be able to turn and face difficulty as a practice. Facing difficulty is the only thing that brings about change, I think. It's radical to come from a place of ethics, whatever happens. It's radical to be able to stand our ground and speak our minds. And it's radical to challenge a culture that we live in without turning away or resorting to hatred and blame. The spiritual community is a radical community. It's based on the ethics of compassion and wisdom. It's a community which comes together based on the values of friendship, simplicity, and non-craving. We need to remember and honour the fact that we have a distinctive and relevant alternative way of looking at the world. The spiritual community has the ability to challenge cultural assumptions through living the Dharma as expansively as we can manage. This may not make us popular. I sometimes say to myself, what do you want, Kamisuri? Do you want to be liked or respected? It's a good question. And here is Sangharakshita roaring from the yogi's joy. It's easy to forget that the Buddhist message is a subversive one, that its values run counter to mundane or worldly aims, and that your commitment to its ethical principles may lead you, on occasion, to offend conventional notions of morality. So we might as well act with as much integrity, decisiveness, and with as much kindness, generosity, and clarity as we can manage. The law of conditionality means that ethical actions will always have positive effects, even though we may never know what they are. We may never see the results of our actions. That's fine. So we might as well act according to our ideals and principles. Speak out, take risks, and trust the process. And remember, we don't have to do this on our own. By acting this way, we give cosmic significance to our day-to-day experience. Cosmic significance to our day-to-day experience. We are no longer powerless, and we can live passionately, courageously, and joyfully.